You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
so people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. People. You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a red disease.
I'm running like a red disease. Get some people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yeah. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. Good morning, family. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshie Hotep family. It's a beautiful day. We're here every Monday. Oh, let me just say this before I get off into that. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, I know, dear brothers and sisters, you got it done anyway. So continue to do all that needs to be done for the progress of our people, your family, our community, our people, our world. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed, and check out previously recorded programs that are date and titled. And thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. Appreciate you, man. You know it. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, like I said, I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. But Monday evening, all times are going to give our Eastern times, is Acres of Diamonds. Acres of Diamonds is public affairs programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Tuesdays from 8 to 10. Wednesdays from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Revive from 8 to 10. There is a Thursday program. I got to get the information on it, but also to a program that does come on Thursday, but not on Time for an Awakening Media, but on Blog Talk Radio, and that is Us Lifting Us, their Thursday night broadcast from 9 to 10. I'll give a detail on that in a minute. Friday, if it's Friday, and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters. With Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, check out Time for an Awakening on Fridays from 8 until Saturday. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's right, it's not me. It is Sister POC with her program, Revive. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Also, too, on Fridays, right after my program on Friday, Sister Marcia will have her program. I'm not sure what it's called, but I'll get the details on that, too. And her programs will be from 1 p.m. Eastern, either from 1 hour or 2 hours. But I'll give you more details on that. And, of course, the number to call here at Time for an Awakening, whatever program it might be, is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from WeBuyBlack.com. Go to WeBuyBlack.com because they have everything you need from American African-owned businesses. If you are in the Atlanta area, you can go to the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall where they sell products that we produce. We sell products that we produce, laundry detergent, lotions, razors, all kinds of good stuff.
Check them out, webyblack.com. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Check out my good brother Bomani Tayembe. His organization is AfricaForTheAfricans.org. He has been taking our brothers and sisters to the motherland in hopes of repatriation and investment tours. He has a tour coming up in May. His tour in May is May 22nd through June 4th. 14-day tour. $3,700. You can give him a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429, and find out about the payment plans and so forth. If you want to check out previous tours, go to photos of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to check out videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. And also, tours also coming up this year. He has one in November 22nd to December 2nd to South Africa, Johannesburg and Cape Town. And then he has one at the end of this year back to Ghana from December 24th. That you can spend the holidays in Ghana, December 24th through January 4th. And so those are my good brother Bomani Tayembe's tours. And give him a call. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Go online and check it out. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. It's right in the Black Madonna Bookstore, located in the West End, 404-549-8676. It's right in the Black Madonna. If you want books, if you want clothes, furniture, artwork, the red, black, and green shoes, Kwanzaa kits, the Shrine of the Black Madonna has it. They also have an African Holocaust Museum. They also have a class every Saturday. Every Saturday, open, free and open to the public, 1:30 to 3:30 on Saturdays. 1:30 to 3:30 on Saturdays. Class Know Thyself, instructed by Brother Olatunji. And then, of course, if you cannot, then you can buy the Multimedia Library. That's right, the most extensive cultural library of its kind. Over 15,000 video files, 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and 2,000 books. I mean 4.5 terabytes of Africa enlightenment, all at your disposal. So you can call the Shrine of the Black Madonna and get information on that as well. Another bookstore in Atlanta, here in the Atlanta area, is the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, very close, right across from the kiosk of We Buy Black, is Medu Bookstore. If you go to the Medu Bookstore, they don't have the book you're looking for. Believe me, they'll get it for you. They've done it for me a few times. So check out the Medu Bookstore. The other bookstore is where I was this past Saturday in Lithonia. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore had a great conversation. My good brother did a presentation. Sister Mama Marimba Ani was there laying down some good wisdom. So it was a beautiful evening, Saturday's past Saturday evening. So check out Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. If they don't have the book you want, they'll get it for you because there is light in the Black Dot. They also have the red, black, and green shoes. In fact, I got the white ones, the UNIAs. Picked them up from my good brother, Brother Ajamu, Brother Kazimde Ajamu. He was at the stepper set this past weekend. His wife was there. The stepper set was nice, though. I did go on that Thursday for African attire. It was really beautiful, really beautiful. Us Lifting Us, ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. As I mentioned before, every Thursday night, there's the ULU membership call. They broadcast on Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern time. And the number to call is 929-477-2789, 477-2789. You can be part of that call. Also, too, what ULU is about is a cooperative, pulling our monies together to do for ourselves. And, of course, we created a cafe, Cafe ULU, here in the Atlanta area in the Sylvan Plaza, 2036 Sylvan Road, 2036 Sylvan Road. We have our cafe open Monday, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we have coffee. That's right, we have coffee. We sell coffee. We have African coffee, Cameroon, Tanzanian, Kenyan, and of course where coffee was born. Coffee was started in Ethiopia. We also have Nicaraguan, Panamanian, Brazilian, you name it, we have coffee. Papua New Guinea. So check them out. We also have loose teas because everything at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. We have potato chips, but the potato chips, Symphony Potato Chips, is a brother and his two daughters. Outstanding. The two dough girls with the cookies and cakes. Oh, everything is beautiful. So check out Cafe Ulu. Go online, CAFEULU.com, and order some coffee. Go online to Us Lifting Us and become a member. Us Lifting Us. Also, a product we sell at Cafe Ulu is my good brother, Brother Novak Young's product, which is Ambrosia. Ambrosia, the delicious vitality drink. Drinks contain alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic cane sugar, chlorophyll, hibiscus, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, spirulina, and the various products. There's five. There's original, the bite, cinnamon, the gold, and the green of Ambrosia. I'll break those down to you one day again, I'll tell you. Ambrosia. Akabin Institute and Akabin House 20th anniversary celebration, Saturday, March 2nd. This Saturday, brothers and sisters, is the 20th anniversary of the Akabin House and Akabin Institute, Brother Baba Baruti and Yah Baruti. It is going to be this Saturday at the Sweet Spot, 675 Metropolitan Parkway here in Atlanta. 675 Metropolitan Parkway is right at the end where Abernathy comes off and Metropolitan Parkway comes in right there. It is east of the West End. It's east of the West End. And the donation is $20. But also, too, they're seeking, if you're unable to attend, we ask that you make a general or, to me, a sizable donation to the fundraising campaign through PayPal or through Cash App, and that's Yah Baruti, or a check or money order payable to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30311. I repeat, make your check or money order payable to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30311, and the work that they are doing. And, of course, we'll find out and talk about more of that when Baba Baruti comes on the air. At this time, we're going to go to our daily revolutionary thoughts on the Inye Sesem of revolutionary thoughts. We're going to look at, because, you know, usually on the weekends there are some good ones, and so I go back to that. And so the 23rd, I'm going to read that one. That was Saturday and yesterday, Sunday, and, of course, today, the 25th. February 23rd. This is one of the paradoxes of human behavior, that the very things that shape us and make us behave the way we do, the way we see the world, the way we see it and relate to people, the way we relate to them, are those things that occur in our lives at points we cannot remember or we cannot recall. Dr. Amos Wilson. Imagine lying in filth, disease, spittle, vomit, pus, slime, identifiable excrements from bed sores, fleas, ringworms, and lice. Imagine worms, maggots, in a bodily waste, maggots thriving in the bed sores of your back, arms, legs, and head, and whips welted, and the wounds cut and kept open by the metal cuffs locked to your wrist, ankles, and sometimes necks. Imagine an ever-ending scratching, tearing through skin whenever you could reach to get the parasites and the disease infesting your body. Imagine sweat, tears, human and rat feces, blood, pieces of flesh, teeth, toenails, fingernails, hair, menstrual blood, aborted fetuses, broken water, dead babies, afterbirth, screaming, moaning, numbing pain, living bodies not moving for days. This is not fiction. It was the worst nightmare in humanity. It was raw, unrelenting horror. Only someone seeking to universalize and normalize European barbarities or make our Holocaust less tragic than it actually was would paint a picture that would allow us to rest easy with our past has mercilessly dehumanized and enslaved people. Affirm. Remember how awaken. Remember. Remembrance hasn't awakened me to what must be done. Affirm. Remembrance has awakened me to what must be done. February 24th. No one can truly defend democracy while fostering dictatorships and tyranny throughout the world. No judiciary system can fight against crime if that system itself is an umbrella for crime-related activities. Fukuyu. Sorry, I have a pronunciation. I can't get it right, but that's close to it. A new handgun is produced every 20 seconds by the 922 gun manufacturers in this country. That comes to 3 handguns every minute, 180 hours, 100 handguns in every hour, 180 handguns in every hour, 4,300 every day, 30,240 every week, nearly 130,000 every month, and over 1.5 million each year. Still, this does not speak to the 250 million plus illegal guns already in circulation or untold number of illegal ones brought through underground markets or through prized owners by veterans of European wars on the world. It does not speak to the assault weapons, shotguns, rifles, grenades, launchers, bazookas, attack helicopters, tanks, or handheld surface-to-surface missiles. And last but not least, this legal handgun market is in no way speaks to the thousands of individuals who know, or millions who can easily learn how to make weapons. Guns, whether produced in factories or in basements, are made by people using relatively simple technology like the kind illustrated in the Anarchist Cookbook. What one can make, another one can replicate. A mind focused on violence and destruction will surely find a way to this end. A people whose cultural acele, personality, direct them to live, to conquer, and rule by armed force will become better and better at it as they practice against all others. Affirm, I clearly recognize the violent nature of Europeans, but not passively. Affirm, I clearly recognize the violent nature of Europeans, but not passively. February 25th. We cannot wait a people who have denied our reality and attempt to destroy or neutralize the healthiness of our culture to provide solutions. We cannot look to these people to restore our way. We cannot await a people who have denied our reality and attempt to destroy or neutralize the healthiness of our culture to provide solutions. We cannot look to these people to restore our way. Imuke Kambang. At the end of the day, the work begins. After we expanded all our energy surviving the madness comes the second wind that enables us to smile at and hug each other in a genuine, unpretentious love and again to begin the quiet, insistent work of nation building. It is a glorious, fulfilling time when we attend lectures by our own, have our study groups, drum and dance, and attend community diversity classes, sometimes face-to-face, sometimes online. It is when we direct our rights program, carefully listen to the wisdom of our most thoughtful elders, study our classics, write our truths, teach from the heart, go to spiritual gatherings and watch and discuss the merits and lessons of our historical documentaries in Sankofa. It is time spent celebrating births, spiritual joinings, and family, a time when families complement and individuals can receive counsel. We gather at day's end as individuals in collective meditation to correctly channel our righteous rage, as families deliberating our mission statement, as communities reaffirming our desire to earn our ancestors' appreciation. It is our time and our time alone. and our time is now.
Affirm. I fill my space, time purposely with us. I fill my spare time purposely with us. Affirm. I fill my spare time purposely with us. In Yesesim, the calendar of revolutionary daily thought. Baba Barudi. This is African Perspectives, brothers and sisters. I'm glad that you're with us. I hope that wherever you are, wherever you're listening from, and I hope that it's going to be, I know that it is going to be a great day. We're going to have a great program. I have my good friend, Brother Baba Barudi on. He'll be on pretty soon, because it's already 11:30, you know, so I'll wait for him to come. Let me just say this. Another note. Today, February 25th, 5 years ago today, I saw this online. Brother Chakwe Lumumba passed. He was the former mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, but more importantly, he was a brother who, as an attorney, fought hard for our people. He's the one that got the Clark sisters off down in Florida. He was a brother who was dedicated and committed to making sure that our situation was addressed and redressed. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from that break, hopefully my good brother will be with us, and then we can continue on with the program. So I'm going to take a break now, so I won't have to do it, you know, at the top of the hour to break the show up. So you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
There is no one above you. I want you to know that I'm so much to me. You give me what I need. I'm so proud of you.
I'm so proud of you.
I love you for staying strong. You got it going on. I'm so proud of you. Going through thick and thin, brothers, you're gonna win. I'm so proud of you.
I'm so proud of you.
Whenever you're facing doubt, brothers, gonna work it out. I'm so proud.
I got unshakable faith
in my life, brother. I love you. I'll never try to hurt you. I want you to know that I'm here for you.
I'm here for you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I'm so happy that we have our guest here, Brother Mwalimu Baruti. Brother Baruti, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Baba. How you doing today?
I am doing fine, Baba. I'm doing great. In fact, I've been trying to make this happen.
Warriors at work.
Yeah? Huh?
I said the sun is out and the Warriors are at work.
That's right. The Warriors are at work. Hey, that's what they need to be, because that's what time it is. It is ongoing, and we've been trying to put this together for some time, and I'm so happy. We did have a program when I was on Blog Talk. You came on on Blog Talk, but now a chance for our listeners who are on Time for an Awakening Media and Black Talk Radio Network and those who listen to this program from wherever they are. And I'm really happy that you took this time out to spend some time with me.
I'm glad to be on. You know, it's always fun. And I have to qualify that word fun sometimes, but I guess warriors need to have fun too. It's always fun talking with you.
Yeah.
It's always fun, you know, conversing about those things that are important without it becoming so serious that you can barely breathe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I enjoy this and I appreciate it. And the folks who are listening, of course, those who don't know need to appreciate the fact of your consistency over the decades in making sure that people continue to get the word by whatever means you could make happen in terms of the airways.
That's for sure. I am committed and dedicated to self-determined independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people, because that's what this show is about. In fact, I maintain there really is no other discussion. Everything else is moot. If you ain't talking about that, you ain't talking about nothing. And you know, there was a cat that when I was on Blog Talk, brother out of St. Louis, who would call. He called himself Pianki, but I told him, I said, man, Pianki rolling over in his grave for you talking the way you're talking, to have a name like Pianki of the 25th dynasty pharaoh. And he would just throw stuff in there. And I just told him, listen, man, I don't want to argue with you. It's ludicrous to argue with another African person about us being self-determining, being free and sovereign. That's crazy. The discussion we should be having is, how do we achieve that? What are the mechanisms that we need to do to come together to make that happen? That's what we need to talk about, you know, not whether, you know. So, but
I think for a lot of people, because they have been socialized in the West and or been in the West so long, but mainly because they've been socialized in it, they have a major disconnect between the quality of a name, the what's supposed to come as a result of the name, the kind of work that's supposed to be done when you hold a particular name, the kind of mentality you're supposed to have because of that name, and just having that name. So they want to take the glory of that name. They want to take the honor
right.
of that name.
Right.
But they don't want to do what's required of that work. And they think that just because they take that name, that therefore they have that power. No, the power comes from the work that created that name.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, so it's,
that's why
you see that a lot. That's part of a main part of our tradition that Urugu has moved us away from, which has allowed them to stay on top of us. We've disconnected what we say from what we do, and it's gotten to a point where that contradiction has become normalized. Where, if you're doing what you say that you're supposed to be about, people are wondering what's wrong with you because
mm-hmm.
it's so abnormal. You know, so the I see a lot of people walking around with names that they really shouldn't carry, including
right.
names like man, woman, you know, elder.
Yep, you know, elder. Exactly, yeah.
It's amazing to me how that's become so normal, so everyday, that when you see somebody who is actually acting like a man, when you see somebody who's actually acting like a woman, when you see somebody who's actually acting like an elder or a mother or a father, it throws you because mm-hmm. it's not the norm.
Right. It's not the norm. You know, like for me, you know, I was given this name at an African naming ceremony at our festival, informal, you know, it wasn't a real formal naming, but we had a naming ceremony at the festival, and I was given this name by a sister in the community, an elder in the community. She says, I see you in the community, I see what you do, I have a name for you. And she said, your name is Oshiyemi Adelabu. Oshiyemi means leadership that fits him. Adelabu means crown across great water. And so I took that name. I would use it within Kwanzaa time. Then I made a decision to legally change my name, you know, to go through that whole process, because I believe in self-determination. I believe in Kuji Chagaliya. Now, understand this, though, Baba. I don't advocate name changes for us. I did it because I felt it was right for me. I don't advocate name changes, because there are some people with some beautiful names who have done some heinous things. Some crazy things. So it's not in the name. It is the mind. So I advocate a mind change. So once your mind is right, if you feel a name change is right for you, you'll do it. But more importantly, your behavior and your conduct towards yourself and our community is different, whatever name that you have. So, you know.
We have it backwards. It's talking about that contradiction. We have it backwards. The name is supposed to follow. Well, the name... If we were operating within our tradition, if we were operating within traditional African communities, it would be a little different, because the community around you would be guiding you in the direction of the name that you have been given at and before and after birth. So that would be different in terms of your whole mentality towards your name. But the way we approach this naming thing in the West is sort of like the same way we approach mud cloth, the same way we approach, most of us approach locks.
Yeah.
The politics isn't there.
Right.
The mission isn't there. We don't carry the importance of things having to be earned.
So
take it and we run with it like the children who take credit for things that their parents did and they didn't contribute to it. You know, when they go to school and say, yeah, look at my project, but they didn't do anything for the project. So we're walking around with names that we haven't earned. That, when you talk about the what we need to return to, what we need to have, if we don't start earning who we say we are, if we don't start earning this, like the sister, she saw you doing the work in the community. So from that, she said, this name fits. It wasn't this name fits and maybe we'll call him that and maybe eventually he'll get around to doing what he's supposed to be doing. No, the name came as a result of you being witnessed by the community as doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that isn't African in our tradition when we were who we are, but this is a different reality and we have to get back to that reality.
Yeah.
And that's the process of doing it in this reality, seeing what people do and then naming them, because the contradiction is so great. There's no guarantee. In fact, it's almost the opposite. Guarantees that the person is going to continue to do whatever nonsense they've been doing once they get the name, because the name is enough work in and of itself in their mind.
Mm. And see, that's the thing. You're given these names. It's almost like symbolism without substance.
Yeah.
You know, In fact, no, it is absolutely symbolism without substance. You have a beautiful name, but your conduct, mm-hmm. attitude, and behavior, particularly towards our mm-hmm. community and our people, is deplorable, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah. you know.
And it's become so much of this. I mean, this is something that we could probably talk about, not just for hours, but for days. That contradiction
right.
undermines everything that we're doing. And the normalization, the everyday seeing of contradiction as being normal and okay, and in fact even glorified if it gets you ahead or if it gets you an advantage in a particular situation, we have lost that mind and core. So, you know, we're operating within a culture and social system where every single solitary oracle, every single solitary principle of Ma'at has been flipped onto its opposite, and the opposite has been glorified. So within that context, it's just having, like you said, Ashel, it's a pretty name. Mm-hmm. It's something that makes you feel like you're something that you're not, or something that you can use to fool people into thinking that you're something that you're not until you're able to get over on them.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much of that going on. The level of deception within the quote-unquote conscious community
mm-hmm.
is beyond
it,
reason.
Right, it is.
Virtually
I agree.
Everybody there has an African name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's and I say quote-unquote conscious community because of the contradiction that's there, not because of what it could be, but because of what it is to such a degree, the level of compromise, the ability to just walk in and say, I'm such and such or such and such, and people act like it's not something that has to be measured. Okay, I walk in and I say, well, I'm elder such and such. Well, okay, where's the evidence of that? What community said that you are an elder based upon what you have done relative to that community? So that contradiction you're talking about in terms of not even necessarily recommending for most of us that we take on African names, because we have to, that sovereignty requires us earning that and passing on the understanding that in order for you to be African, in order for you to be sovereign, is something that you have to practice. It's not just something that you can say and keep on going.
Right. It's just like eldership. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. you don't really, in true eldership, because you're old. There are a lot of folks that ain't done a damn thing. They just grew old, you know.
Yes.
I don't know if you can call them
yes.
elders. Elder, and so when I ask, even though I'm in that elder state, but when I do a libation, mm-hmm. I still ask if I see esteemed elders, those men mm-hmm. and women who I recognize who have stood the test of time of helping our community, and they're still in that struggle, still in that fight, still instructing and so forth at that elder age, recognizing them for what contributions that they've had to our struggle and asking them for permission to speak, you know,
absolutely.
Because, you know, they have earned that. They have truly earned that, you know. But now let me.
I remember when I finished writing Centered, the book Centered, I sent a copy to Baba Hannibal Afrique, and it's dedicated to Baba Hannibal. I sent him a copy, and I got a phone call, you know, not too much later, and Baba Hannibal was upset with me. And he said, you know, I appreciate the fact that you dedicated the book for me, and you know, and I'm honored and all the rest of that good stuff. He said, but don't call me a Jagna.
Oh, okay.
And I said, why not? I wasn't getting it. He said, because there are things that are used in the description of a Jagna that I don't qualify. I haven't shed the blood. I haven't done, you know, he's going on this long list. And I'm
okay.
thinking about, this is one of the greatest African men I have ever known.
Yeah.
And I simply said to him, but Baba, that's how we see you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are the model. You are the individual who we know who best epitomizes approaching this, coming close to this.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, oh, you know, he sort of calmed down and said, oh, okay. But it's like that understanding by most folks, and I'm hearing young folks referring to other young folks, and of course this is anything against young folk, but I'm hearing them refer to other young folk as Jegna, and young folk haven't been here long enough.
No.
Technically, I haven't been here long enough.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, to me, at Jegna, and I understand, listening audience, we're making a reference to what those others say is a mentor. We don't use mentor because mentor in the history of Greek history is where that word comes from, was a man who Odysseus gave his son over to him to watch him, to quote, mentor him, guide him while he was on his voyage, on his odyssey. And of course, mentor, because the Greek civilization was very heavy into homosexuality and pedophilia, he was molesting the young boy, as the story goes. So to me, I've never want us to use the word mentor, but the word Jegna. And what is the plural? Jegnok?
Yes.
Yeah.
J-E-N-O-C-H.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, and I know we don't have forever, Baba, but I just went and got a book where I have the definition of Jegna written down. Is it okay if I read it?
Please do. Please do.
This is very important in terms of the magnitude. What you're just talking about is they're not even mentor and Jegna. They're not even comparable in terms of the magnitude of what's required to qualify to be called that. So according to Wade Nobles of Jegna, or Jenoch, I believe that's how it's pronounced. I'm not sure how that's pronounced.
Okay.
But it's J-E-N-O-C-H. Are those special people who have, one, been tested in struggle or battle, two, demonstrated extraordinary and unusual fearlessness, three, shown determination and courage in protecting her or his people, land, and culture, four, shown diligence and dedication to our people, five, produced an exceptionally high quality of work, and six, dedicated themselves to the protection, defense, nurturance, and development of our young by advancing our people, place, and culture. Most of us wouldn't even fit in one of those.
Right.
No, and so we got to stop using words loosely, words like conscious, words like centered, words like, you know, Jegna. These are very, very serious terms, and all of them are earned designations.
And see, what happens with us, because of the constant reiteration of the number of words and how we use them, these words simply become meaningless. They're just symbols without any substance. There's no true understanding, you know. Within our community.
Like locks.
Exactly.
At one time, there was, if you had locks, then that meant seriously political was going on.
Right, right.
Now, you know, we're here in Atlanta, if I'm looking at a guy with locks, I'm wondering other things. You know, automatically, because it's lost its politics. It's lost its meaning. People who have no business anywhere near natural hair, if you will.
Just like,
I know we all should have our hair natural, but there, in terms of the politics involved and what it should imply in a state of war, there are people who shouldn't be anywhere near that. There are people who shouldn't be anywhere near African attire. There are people who shouldn't be anywhere near an Ankh.
Yeah.
Because of the meaning that's supposed to come with that. Because what that's supposed to say about your mind, not just your appearance, but what that's supposed to say about your mind and your actions.
Because that's what's most important. I mean, you know, If my mind is right, truly right, then everything else outside of me would be reflective of that. Now, granted, I'm in the West. We're here in the United States. So if I have a sport coat on with a white shirt and pair of slacks, but my mind is right, I'm still right.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm still right. You know,
absolutely.
And if I throw on a grand boobah and daishiki or whatever, or if I'm a female, got a gele on, as long as my mind is right. But I've seen, Brother Baba Buruti, I've seen some of us who have locks, who have cultural clothing, you know, married to Caucasians, you know, or dealing with Caucasians, or who support the system, you know?
The absolute contradiction.
Yes.
The absolute contradiction. I say, if you're sleeping with the enemy, you are the enemy. You know, because your mind is not. It's nowhere near where it's supposed to be, and we of course, as you said, we're in the West, so we have to be thinking warriors, if you will. So for me, and someone attempted to critique me on this one time, I said, when I go into enemy territory, I mean, you don't walk into enemy territory with your uniform on, if you will. If I'm one army and I'm fighting another army and I'm maybe spying on the other army, or I have to travel to the other army's territory to what have you, I'm not going to walk into that situation in full attire so they can see who I am and identify me coming.
Exactly.
So that when I walk into enemy territory, well, I'm not wearing anything African because I don't want them to know who I am. I don't want to give them the heads up. I don't want them to give them a jump on the game. Now, when I'm with us in our space, in our sacred spaces, where we're loving each other and showing each other who we're supposed to be about, well, you better believe I'm going to look like an African.
Yeah.
In those spaces, so we have to, it's like you said, if your head is right, if your mind is right, then, of course, you're doing things in a thinking fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very important for us to attempt to disentangle not only the action but the appearance,
right,
of warriors. I mean, I have, and I know you have too, Bubba, but I've known warriors who I never saw in a conscious t-shirt, but who were some of the most serious working Africans in the world. Their whole mentality was, well, my job is to get African sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
That'll give the children the privilege to wear and be whatever they want to, however they want to, because they'll be in a sovereign space. They'll be under sovereign control of self. But I've seen some people who had no business anywhere near anything African, sleeping with the enemy, high drunk all the time, stealing from people, being, you know, all the things that we're not supposed to be, but they got the cleanest, you know, and the most expensive African attire on in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a lot of us living mass contradictions. There's no doubt about it.
Yep. Yes. Minicide is real.
Yeah. Yeah. Minicide is, I mean, Dr. Bobby Wright, who I love, he coined that phrase, and it is seriously real, particularly now, more so than before, because a lot of our people don't have a clue. And Neely Fuller said, if you do not understand European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, I know he said white supremacy, but I don't say the Caucasians because they ain't white, and they sure as hell ain't supreme. But they are Europeans, they Caucasians, and they're very extreme. And they created this whole idea of racism, and they believe they have privilege. So that's what I call them. And our problem is that we don't understand how it functions, how it operates. And so everything else we think we understand only confuses us. And I maintain that we are so damn confused that we're confused in our confusion. And that's how confused we are. We ain't got a damn clue. You know?
Bob, you almost had me confused. You know, but that's serious.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, the greatest level of psychosis, you know, that you're not institutionalized, is when you're telling lies and you believe your own lies.
Yeah.
You know, you've gotten to a point where you can't even see the truth, that you don't want to see the truth, but you can't see the truth. The contradictions that necessarily come with menticide, that necessarily come with you rationalizing, being in an inferior state, accepting someone else's definition of you. I mean, Bobby Wright was a genius as far as I'm concerned,
yeah,
in terms of his analysis.
His essay, Psychopathic Racial Personality, is a must read for all of us. A must.
Yes. And I wish there is an essay. Now, I know people who have copies, and I have a copy of it also. And I know that you, if you don't have it, I know you've read it. There's an essay that's not included in that book that is entitled Menticide. I believe it's The Ultimate Threat to Black Survival or something like that. But that essay, to me, and that's his most important essay, it's not included in that collection.
Right.
Warriors really need to get their hands on the collection. It's in that essay where, in the very last paragraph, he says that blood debts must be repaid in blood.
Mm.
You know, and this is the book by itself, Psychopathic, you know, Racial Personality, that's, you know, an incredible read and reread and reread and reread. But this essay that a lot of people are not aware of. It is an extremely powerful piece of information. It's an extremely powerful idea in terms of directing us where we need to go. And it's in that essay he really does a lot of discussion about the black social theory that we have to have if we're going to move, if we're going to move forward, because of that, as you're saying, that thinking that has to come before the movement, that should come before the naming and all the rest of that.
Yeah.
But that mental side is so,
it's
so deep. And it's like, it's become pretty much, I want to say first nature, but second nature to us. And we're defending it at all costs. I look at the quote unquote conscious community, and I see a much larger percentage of people who are asking in their mental side that are not. And it's gotten to the point, I'll say at least here in Atlanta, because this is where I live, but it's gotten to the point here in Atlanta where the those individuals who attempt to truly be African, who attempt to follow Ma'at, to be Ma'at, to follow the tradition of our ancestors and not for show, that they have become very abnormal, small in number in terms of the percentage, and the percentage of those who are contradictory is increasing and
right.
has been increasing rapidly for a
yes.
while, to the point where they're able to dismiss with authority those people who are trying to be African. Those people who are doing their best to raise their families, to rear their families in the African way. And that to me is very scary, because it can get to the point, just like we can't be re-enslaved, it can get to the point where what we call consciousness is simply a little colored Yorugu stuff,
mm-hmm.
where our emphasis is on, you know, the culture thing, as it said, where we have the culture attire, and we're holding copies of Destruction of Black Civilization and ISIS papers and Yoruba under our arms as we're walking around spewing forth this quote unquote knowledge that we're not acting on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that to me is real scary, because this is having a major impact on the children. The children, I said, I'm watching like the third generation of this in terms of my lifetime. The children have come to, many of the children, most of the children have come to understand the importance of being contradictory to being African.
Mm.
So they, because of what they see around them, then they assume that anything that they look at, if they feel like calling it African, then they can call it African. And they don't have to abide by the you know, the old traditional stuff that you know, is outdated and outmoded and all the rest of that. They can do the same thing as everybody else and still claim to be African.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very scary to me in the direction that that's taking us, because it's not taking us to a place where we can be African. It's not moving us in the direction of being sovereign.
Right. You know, one
not empowering us in any degree, and it's not that they're making this up on their own. They're seeing this in the adults who are around them.
Oh yeah.
Of course, that should be something that's earned also. So I just say the grown males and the mm-hmm. grown females, because they're mm-hmm. not adults as far as I'm concerned. They're not men. They're not women. They're just
right.
Taller,
exactly.
older children.
Yeah, in their behavior and in their minds. You know, one
yes.
of the things that's going to correct that, of course, is the education of our children. And
absolutely.
Even us, our adult, in an African-centered way, in an African-conscious thought. And of course,
mm-hmm.
The celebration this Saturday of the 20th anniversary
yes.
of Akabin Institute and Akabin House at the Sweet Spot, 675 Metropolitan Parkway here in Atlanta. And tell us more about the celebration. Tell us about the Institute and how it is coming, and some of the, you know, things that you have done. And I know I'm asking my listeners, and I'll be continuing to do this, to support, you know, what the work that you do, to support the Institute. And they can do that, of course, through PayPal. They can do that through Cash App, or they can send a check or money order payable to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310, and I'll continue to announce that. But give us the reason why, how important it is for this institute and Occupant House to celebrate 20th anniversary, but even extend that to 40, 50, 60 years, you know what I'm saying, as an institute.
Bob, I appreciate the opportunity to do this. This is our life. This is what we have been doing for the last 20 plus years. This is officially 20 years in terms of the establishment of Occoquan. This is what we live for. And in fact, it should be about a month, maybe 5 weeks. A new book will be coming out entitled "To Educate a People," which is my discussion on what African-centered education is and what it should be about. We've had so many people who have come to us over the last decade. People who wanted to homeschool, people who wanted to start their own educational institutions, people who were just curious about African-centered education. And a lot of the times the question was about curriculum, and we kept telling them, well, we don't have, you know, a curriculum per se. We can direct you to, we know, like two or three good ones that are out there, and it's extremely time-consuming to create a curriculum, but we didn't have one just to hand them and say, okay, we'll follow this path. We discovered that most of the best schools that we're aware of, they had material, but they went on the guide of spirit and what they understood about the African tradition, and they've grown since then. So the book is not a curriculum. I don't want people to get confused on that. It is what it means to be African in terms of our education, how we're supposed to pursue African-centered education, how we're supposed to do this. There's also a discussion in there about the Occoquan Institute issue, Occoquan Institute itself, in terms of how we came into existence, the thought that came, that preceded that, and what has been created here since then. In terms of our direction and how the school operates. And they say, well, this is 20 years. This is the 20th year for Occoquan. It started with our daughter. And this is part of the mentality that goes along with it, because there has to be a way of thinking about this. When Occoquan started as a result of our daughter, and she was attending a good African-centered school, or Imhotep Center of Education here in Atlanta, which still operates and still operates well. But they decided not to have a high school because they didn't have enough students to enroll to create a high school, to continue the high school. So our daughter was supposed to be starting the high school the next year. But I received a fellowship which paid my salary for that year and allowed me to start saying, okay, well, I continue to do this writing and she can just be homeschooled with me. And then when any odds is out of class, out of teaching at Morehouse, she can give her what she needs from her. And that same week, the other students who were going into high school, their parents called, and that started the homeschool thing. But there wasn't, what's important here is that Eni and I didn't sit down and talk about or ask her, well, what are we going to do next? There wasn't any question. She wasn't going to be going to public school because of what we understood, knew, and had been a part of in our lives. There was no question. There wasn't the fear factor didn't come in. The how are we going to do this factor didn't come in because she wasn't going to public school. She wasn't going to be going to a religious institution. She wasn't be going to a private white school. All of those options were not up for discussion because that wasn't happening. So to me, that's part of the process of creating a homeschool situation or creating a home institution of African-centered education where there are some options which you don't even need to consider because they're not options. They're not options. And to me, if we're bringing up our children to be African, those are not options as far as I'm concerned. But Occoquan, like you said, it's in its 20th year. We have never accepted any government funding because that comes with strings. And those strings have become tighter and tighter in terms of homosexuality and bringing in non-African students, things that were decided beforehand were not going to happen, not here. So we have, I was going to say essentially, we have wholly been able to operate for these 20 years because the community has supported us. It has supported us financially. It has supported us with you know, students and tuition. It has supported us by purchasing the books and DVD lectures from myself and DVD lectures from Inia. At the understand the gratitude that we feel toward our community. This celebration isn't for Inia and I. This is a celebration of what the community has done, because none of this would have happened without the community's support. None of it would have happened. Most of the people who purchase books that I've written know that money is going to fund Akabin. Most of the folks who send donations, they know that this is going to fund Akabin. If I could just, I would be hours listing the things that people have sent to Akabin because they wanted the students to be more comfortable or to have the things they needed to learn here. I mean, we had a grandfather who came in because he wanted the students to have a separate bathroom and took a closet in the hallway and turned it, he and one of his brothers turned it into a bathroom with, you know, a toilet and a sink in there. I mean, blackboards, the paper, the list is virtually endless. We've had neighbors who have brought over books for the students. We have a first edition copy of Richard Wright's Native Son hardback that
wow.
a neighbor donated to the school because they wanted the students to have sets of encyclopedias, computers, desks, chairs. That list is virtually endless. I don't know how many chess games. I don't know how many books, how many dictionaries. A brother said, "What do you all need?" I said, "We need some Webster's Collegiates." And the next thing we know, that there are like 6-8 Webster's Collegiates sitting on the porch in a UPS box. So that is, and of course, obviously, we're not rich. Obviously, we're struggling like everybody else is, and I don't know any independent institutions that is able to survive on the tuition alone, whether they're African centered at heart or just, you know, the image of it. I don't know of any. I don't know of any quote unquote independent white elite institutions that are able to survive on tuition alone.
Yeah. Baba, how many independent African centered schools in Atlanta and in the nation that you know of, roughly?
you're having me grimace at having to answer that because, and that's something I talk about in the book as well. This the term African centered in terms of what their goals, and for you. Those like you and I, we have the idea of sovereignty, the reality of sovereignty as the ultimate end goal. That's what all this work is going toward. Mm-hmm. So if I was going to measure being African-centered, not on preparing our children to do better in this reality without the stigma of racism and having their feelings hurt, if I was to base it on the strengthening of Western society, something that Amos N. Wilson critiqued ceaselessly. If I was to base it on being African in terms of our tradition and not adopting insane, perverted, and glorifying insane, perverted European ways, if I was going to base it on not just being an institution that again protects our children's feelings until they're old enough to take the brunt of racism and not be knocked down too much, then the number of African-centered schools would go down intensely. Now, homeschoolers, I would say there's quite a few of those who fit that category, but in terms of institutions, African-centered institutions, in the city of Atlanta, I might even count them on one hand. And included in that wouldn't be the largest of the quote-unquote African-centered, quote-unquote African-centered. African-centered, the term itself has become watered down. It's an identifier to say that, you know, we're black and we don't want to say black anymore. And it's not cool yet to say African-American school because it takes too long to say it. So we just say African Center. But most of the institutions walking around talking about the African Center are not African-centered. So if we're talking about the politics of the institutions, if we're talking about the vision of the institutions, if we're talking about the intent and the mentality of the administrators and the teachers, then the vast majority of these institutions are not African-centered. So nationally, I would say, without knowing, without having done the research, but from conversations and dealing with people, maybe 5% of the institutions who are full of black people and are private black institutions, if you will, maybe 5% are truly African-centered. I know that we are. And I could name maybe two or three others in the Atlanta metro area who are. I could name many homeschoolers who are in the Atlanta metro area. But the vast majority of the schools that claim to be African-centered in the Atlanta metro area are not African-centered. They are places that prepare our children to be receptive and embrace Yoruba's culture and society. They don't do a systematic critique. Many of these institutions are black first schools where the core curriculum centered around what it means to be African is the names of whatever black person now can do what white folks are said to have done first. So I would argue that it's very small.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a reason why it's very small. Most of us are very mentecital. We're very afraid of the idea of we don't see a use in being African. We don't see a use in trying to build anything separate that speaks to our greatness that is beyond Yoruba. As so many of our scholars have said, we can't imagine a world without Yoruba in charge.
Yeah.
Many of us can't imagine a world without Yoruba in our bed. You know, and of course, this is... This is planned obsolescence. This is planned making us want to be them and measuring who we are and our capabilities based upon their standard, which is, I would consistently argue, is substandard to us. So the whole heart and soul of Akabin Institute centers around that. We're still caught up in images. So, I mean, we've had people who have come, and Akabin, of course, is in our house. And the best institutions that I have seen, most of the best institutions I've seen some that have grown too large for it. But most of the best institutions that we have are housed in our house because you're following principles. Part of the African-centered economic principle, you know, resides with individuals like Garvey. You know, you build your own. You keep your own.
Right.
You don't pay other people for the space that you're going to be using. We're teaching our children or talking to our children or trying to make our children believe that it's going to be independent while we're forking out money left and right to Yoruba and anybody else for everything that we do, for every one of our conferences, for every one of our schools, for every one of our events, what have you. We're feeding somebody else, and we're trying to claim to be independent or working toward independence. This is even their calendar. This is 2019, and that still has not been accomplished. But we're saying that we can accomplish anything, that we can do anything. I don't understand, and I'm not saying this in frustration.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand how we can say that we are this, but we're not doing the work to do that. We're still waiting for someone to approve of it or to give it to us. We're still afraid to do what we need to do for our children because of what somebody else may think.
The fear. It's fear.
Yes, fear. Fear and ignorance.
Fear and ignorance.
Those are the two most important variables.
Yeah.
You know, at work here.
Yeah.
But when we started Akabin, and I know I got off track, but when we started Akabin, that was something that we realized. We had studied. We had looked at a number of other independent schools because we wanted an independent school. We just, it just came to us like most pregnancies do. It's not planned.
That's right.
And so it got started, but we realized from these other institutions that we could not, it wasn't going to survive off of the tuition, and that we couldn't take money that has strings attached to it, because those strings get multiple and they get harder and harder to get disentangled from.
Yeah.
And even if their strings aren't spoken, the strings are assumed. It's putative. It's understood that this is what you do if you receive this money. And if you don't, you're not going to be receiving
right.
it for long.
Yeah.
So we had to figure out ways to be able to look our children in the face saying they were independent and still be able to survive, not go under. 20 is a lot of years.
It really is. It's a testament. It's a testament to you and to Sister Yah and your dedication and commitment to our people, to educate our people in the right way, to help their minds, and to make young men and young women warriors for our cause, which of course is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. And when I say that in that way, I mean period, on the continent, throughout the diaspora. Sovereignty.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
We have some callers. I'll tell you what, brothers and sisters who are holding, do me a favor, hang up and call right back so I'll know that you really want to talk on the air and have a question or comment for Baba Baruti. And so if you do that at this time, I can acknowledge you, because I don't want to go through a whole line of saying, are you there, are you there, if you want to say something or not. So if I know that, if you hang up. And for brothers and sisters, believe me, you want to get in conversation with this great man, this great brother of ours, who is, to me, man, a warrior, a real warrior on the front lines for the minds of our people, to educate our people. So any of those who want to get in and have conversation with Baba Baruti, 646, go ahead.
Hey, Tuck, Baba Baruti, it's an honor and a privilege to speak to you, Baba. Just a couple of quick questions. Number one, I noticed that one of the brothers that you taught at Morehouse, they had a video of his, I think his valedictorian speech.
Yeah. Yeah, his commencement speech was outstanding, wasn't it?
Choir Woods.
Yeah. And the reason why I asked you that is, over the 20 years that you have taught our children, have you been able to keep a track on their development in regards to, have they been able to take the lessons that you and your beautiful queen have taught them to lead us to sovereignty and continue the work? That's one question.
Okay. I would say yes and no. It's part of the answer to that question lies in the students who come here, because we can't choose all of our students all the time. We've had some exceptionally good students. We have students, and depending upon, you know, how you want to measure, we have students who are in college. We have students who graduated from college. We have students who are in one of our favorites in a pre-med program at a local high school. Who wants to become a veterinarian. We've had all kinds. Of course, we've had the other end of the spectrum also. It's somewhat hard to tell. But the answer to your question, I'm not trying to avoid the answer. The answer to your question, in all fairness, lies in the student's mentality and the parent or guardian's mentality who brought them here when they came, because we've had students who came through here who didn't get it and didn't want to get it. We've had parents who came here and they brought their children here because there was no place else that they could go. That we have had parents, guardians who brought their children here because the public school system doesn't provide it, and they needed a man who doesn't play. But we are, I would say we're satisfied with the results if we compare the mentality of many of the students who came with what they're doing now. We're satisfied with our delivering of the word to them so that they cannot say that they didn't know, those who choose not to act like they're African. And, of course, we have those students who took what we said along with what their parents said, along with what the community said and did, and they're doing phenomenal things in the community and on the continent. So, you know, in terms of tracking them or in terms of their development, and this may also sound like a non-answer, but 20 years isn't really a long time in terms of seeing what somebody's going to do after they leave you. Often it takes 10, 15 years for folks who came in, and this was the antithesis of what they knew and understood to be the truth. It took a while for it to kick in, or took circumstances for it to kick in. We had a student who left, and they came back 12 years later, and it registered. We had a student who came through here, a nice young man, kind of somewhat timid, and he ended up in prison. Messing around with the wrong people, and while he was in prison, it clicked. You know what's going on. And in terms of the students that we have, it's not just the students here. One of the things Nana Amos Wilson talked about in terms of nation building, when you talk about educating nation building, then you're talking about educating a nation, not just the children. So there have been a lot of adults who have come through here who we've seen change and progress and independence in terms of their movement. I've talked to and corresponded regularly with hundreds of brothers who were incarcerated, and I've seen some come out and go immediately back in. I've seen some come out and run right back to where they came from. I've seen some come out and go into white land and disappear, and I've seen some come out and build something. We've got a brother who's in Mexico who's doing serious work down there. We've got brothers here in Atlanta who are doing serious work. One here in Atlanta, you know, they've acquired some land, and they're creating a community center and all the rest of this. So when we say, for us to answer in terms of students, that also runs the gamut in terms of age. We've had students here, both adult and children, who have started their own schools. And that's a pretty good record, I would argue, you know, not like we're trying to brag or anything, but that's a pretty good record for 20 years. In fact, one of the sisters who was one of the first students in my evening classes, she has a school here in Atlanta, and it's grown in a phenomenal way, and she's still straight on board. She had an event dealing with education not too long ago, and she came to me. I went to the event. It was a huge event, but I came to the event. And the first thing she did was she came and apologized because there was this white presence there, which had to come along with the event in terms of doing a short recording of the people who were responsible for the citizenship. But they're going, Baba. They won't be here for long. So that tells me volumes about what has come out of here and what has already come out of here with the potential to do. We base as you say, what we do or success, if you will, on us and whether we delivered the word to the best of our ability. And if we did that, we're satisfied. We're happy. We know you can't make anyone African. You can only give them, you know, some guidance, and then they have to do that on their own. But I think we've done pretty good. And speaking of folks like Brother Kwao, who did that valedictorian speech, he was, at that time, he was in, I believe, his second year tutoring students here at Akabin, and he was one of NEI's favorite students, and understand she was one of his favorite teachers. And he and his wife now have an educational institution which is very, very serious.
In D.C.
But he came into this.
He has an education institution in D.C., correct? Is that where he is? Yeah. I heard about it.
And Inaya says she remembers their first conversation in her office because she always inquired the students, you know, what they wanted to be. But she asked him what he wanted to be, what he wanted to do in life. And his response was a nation builder.
Well, Baba Baruti, you know, I don't think that there was anything that you left out in that response. You know, if you look at it, the work that you've done and the foundation that you are laying down for our people, in all honesty, some going to get it and some not going to get it. The testimony is like when you said when they got into troubled waters and sitting in that cell, and like Malcolm, they started to think they was able to have that foundation that a great African like yourself has been able to give them. Now, two quick things. Number one, Baba, I would like for you, I don't know what your time is like, but I think we out here need to hear more of you. And I know for a fact, if you got 5 to 7 in the evening, we could get you on the Carl Nelson Show, which is the only, I would say, Afrocentric in mass media. So I hope you would consider that, because the people really need to hear you. And lastly, could you
believe it or not, I am considering that. I had a number of conversations, believe it or not, over the last couple of months about that with people who I respect, and they keep asking me why I'm not. I have tried my best, and I'm still trying my best, except for in the case of Baba Oshi. I'm trying my best to stay offline. I was trying my best to stay offline until I finished this book. It's 3 years behind schedule. Now, this finish, things are going to change, so the time is going to open.
Baba, let me say this to you, and think about this. He has a brother on his show that comes on at least once a month called, I think, what is it, O.C. Jerome Fox. And he has the book, Addicted to White. Now, listen, I don't mean to sound mean or anything, but, brother, that book will be nothing like what you could be able to present to our people on a monthly basis. Now, I'm going to be honest, Baba, whatever I follow, my direction on where I'm going right now in my life, I look totally to your leadership. That's why I want to ask you this last question, because I'm on the fence in what direction I will take this. What is your opinion of this so-called ADOS and DOS movement?
I guess two quick points. Anything that, and I look at them in terms of the concept of escapism. This is not serving our interests, dividing us into little groups who are more envious and hateful of each other and trying to get whatever it is that Urugu is going to give us, or the love that they're going to give us, at the expense of other groups. I'm sure that Urugu is sitting back having a good laugh at all of this divisiveness, and now even more sophisticated divisiveness, where we or these individuals are attempting to single themselves out as the ones most deserving of whatever graft Urugu is going to pass back, or they think that Urugu is going to pass, or the love they think Urugu is going to pass on. In addition to that, the death styles and other things that they are supporting, which some people argue, it's got a lot to do with everything, because the question is not of what you're doing now per se. The question is of where is that going to lead us? And I say in a even though it's kind of different, an effeminate male can pull the trigger of any gun. A little baby can pull the trigger of a gun, but the question is, what are you going to build after you've won? And I don't see anything different in their thought than what Urugu has us thinking. So for me, that divisiveness where you're trying to single yourself out, it's like childishness. It's escapism where you don't want to fight anymore at the Pan-African level. You want to bring the fight here. So if anything, to increase the probability that you'll get the love, or to create this greater divisiveness because you are so angry at what happened to you that you really are not investigating who really did this. We got all of these, and this, of course, is a long discussion. We have all of these pseudo-scholars who are basing all of their arguments on misinformation and lack of study. And I'm not trying to sound like I've studied everything and I've read everything and blah, 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 but they're taking a little grain or something, and they are running with it in this process of escapism. That's the big picture. all of these philosophies, all of these movements, if you will, all of them are based on escapism, which will allow us to become more a part of Urugu's insanity.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So this ADOS, all the rest of these organizations, this farmers, or all of these movements, they are divisive. They are doing nothing but contributing to a distraction, a meaningless distraction in a debate that we should not be having. Because none of this, they're not aimed toward making African people sovereign.
Oh.
And
I'm sorry. I'm just fired up, man. You pointing out two things indirectly, and you may not could say it, but you know I'm gonna say it. You dealt with their disrespect of Pan-Africanism, their undesire of respecting Pan-African, which if you don't have a form of Pan-Africanism will not lead you to sovereignty. And then you indirectly, but could have said it, but I'll say it, them being other freak nation homosexuals, even though I know Oshie gets on me all the time about it. But listen, no homosexual can lead African people no place.
I
just like to thank you, Brother Baruki, and I'm fired up, brother. You got me fired up, and you led me on the path to where I got to go to deal with this. Hotep, peace and love to you and your family, and just keep doing what you're doing, Baba. You are the best.
Hotep warrior, I appreciate that.
Right on, Jay. That's my man, Jay. I'll take this call. 447-447.
No homosexual can lead African.
Hello, Brother Oshie.
Hey. How you doing? This is Paul from across the pond. Paul from the UK. You're on with me and Baba Baruti.
Greetings.
Good morning to your guests, and good afternoon, and good morning to anybody listening around the world. Brother Oshie, I'd like to ask your guests a few questions, if you don't mind.
Please do.
Your guest made a reference to the conscious movement, and what he defined as some deceptive factors.
Be defined as what? I'm going to hear those three words.
Deceptive factors. So something along those lines. Some deceptive
okay.
Within
yes.
The conscious movement.
I understand. Yes.
It's something which I've identified, and I've actually had deliberations with people over. People who I see who are, just observing their movements, and some things will come out of their mouth. I keep saying to people that, some of these people, they're saying one thing and doing completely different. And even some people who are in the UK, I watch carefully because, when I talk, the usual thing what people say to me is I'm passionate. Well, I don't feel I'm passionate per se, but I feel that I want to keep it real because it means a lot to me. I'm not in it for the fun of it. I'm in it because things are wrong and things are not right and they're not going right. Yeah, so that's why I'm in it. But I see some people, and I see them say one thing and then I watch what they're doing and they're doing completely different. And I put that in the deceptive character box. Yeah, and I see a lot of this. And what I find very concerning. Some people who are, I would consider more adept than me, maybe been in it longer than me, I tend to see these characters, they won't say nothing. It's not as if they see, but they won't say. In actual fact, they'll go so much as to defend these characters. And it reminds me of the church, where the pastor is knocking over a few of the young women, and everybody knows what's going on, but nobody says nothing. But then they call themselves Christians, yeah. And I feel it. This is. I see it as like a breach of security. Another thing I have identified is that a lot of our so-called movements, we seem to fail to recognize that security is paramount, because without security, then what are you building? Because you're only building something for these deceptive characters to bring it down. And there is precedence for this. There's a record of this. So, you know, I totally, you know, I am totally connected to that point that you make. And I think for me right now, where I'm standing, it's paramount, because we don't seem to recognize that security is pinnacle. You know, why spend years building something just to have these characters around only to bring you down? You know, to me, it doesn't make no sense. And my question to you is, what is it that we need to do about these characters? Do we just bury our head in the sand like an ostrich and just pretend it's not there and keep going on, you know, and watch people who should know better pretend that it's not going on and just make every excuse in the world for these people just because they want some sort of fame or what I call they're starstruck or whatever? Yeah, you know, what do we do about it? Because to me, it's quite troubling.
First and foremost, I'm sitting here trying to find something in what you said that I disagree with, and I can't find anything in what you said that I disagree with. We see completely and totally eye to eye, and it's very disturbing. It's very frustrating. And for you to use the term breach of security, that is an absolute perfect statement of what's going on, because as long as that breach remains, and that breach is big, as long as that breach remains, we're not building anything.
Absolutely.
We're building absolutely nothing. Now, the problem in answering that is that we think in large terms. We think we think in terms of large numbers of people being able to solve these problems, and that's not how we're going. In my opinion, that's not how we're going to solve it. There's two major problems. One of the problems is Yorugu. And Yorugu, anytime that we organize on a large scale of people, then that, of course, immediately attracts its attention, and it does everything in its power. You can't name me one large-scale organization that they didn't immediately see and immediately come in to destroy. So we're supposed to learn from history. We're supposed to learn from our story. We're supposed to learn from what has happened. And if we've learned no other lesson, then we have to know that we cannot operate in that way, in that public, large, other way, if we're going to solve this problem, because that just opens it up for all kinds of chaos. And all you need is one agent, whether this agent is paid by the state or this agent is paid by their mentor side. All you got to do is have one agent to come in, and it's going to corrupt it. So for us, we've really come to one conclusion. We're not in a position to ostracize or isolate such individuals, and I'm not in a position, being a public figure, to say remove them from existence. That, of course, if I was not, would be my first option, but that's not what I do. We're not in a position to ostracize them, to isolate them, to identify them, to kidnap them and put them in a boot camp that will bring consciousness to them, and I don't even think it's worth the time, personally. As I said, there are too many people. You issue the warning, with the African proverb, issue the warning, some will survive. So we have to, of course, continue to issue the warning. But in terms of the people who are aware, the people who are in agreement with what you just said, and you can see that agreement in what they do and in what they say, not just because, you know, they applaud and say, blah, blah, no, but in terms of what they are actually trying to do themselves. So in terms of the church situation, well, if my daughter's there and I know this guy, but I'm taking my daughter out of the church, that indicates that I understand and I'm doing what's necessary to protect my daughter from this guy who's standing behind the pulpit. Okay, so I'm talking about people who are doing this. Within the center community, and I distinguish the center community from the conscious community because there's a moral, ethical, visionary divide between the conscious community and the center community, in my opinion. We have to, first and foremost, create safe, sacred spaces where those of us who want to be African can be African. I don't know, that may be three people, that may be three families, that may be 30 people. I can't imagine it being 300 people because right now that's too large. You can't manage that. You can't keep bad alien elements from coming in, and you're talking about most of us come with garbage from our Eurocentric socialization, the contradictions that come with that, and you can't, people have to work together to weed that out of each other so that they're creating a better collection of beings, a better collection of Africans. And in order to do that, though, you have to create a space for that to occur. And you can't tell our children, you know, don't be European, don't act like that, don't act like this, and yet we're pushing them out into that space. Or we're saying that in order for them to be sane, then they have to have a social life that includes that. So we have to create these same sacred spaces like Akabin, where our children can be who they're supposed to be, where our community can be where they're supposed to be, where those of like minds can act and can protect each other from the insanity. That's extremely important, and to me, that's extremely practical. You know, let's say that this was, and it is a war, but let's just say that this is a war, and we lose, where I'd rather lose having been righteous than to lose having to go fight with the enemy against me. So and I believe that we are winning. That's what the elders tell me, so I believe that. I have no reason not to believe it. Mama Rama says we're winning, then we're winning. So the goal is to find those things and those ways which allow us to be African, to continue that process, to continue that tradition, and to build outward from that. And I firmly believe that there are people all over the place who are doing that. I don't know them personally, and I don't want to know them personally, because if they are connected to me, then Yoruba is going to be able to identify them. And I don't want them to be identified in that way. I want them to do their work. And I believe that this is going on. I don't think that Baba Oshi and Inyan and I and some other folks are the only people who understand and know this and are acting on it. So I believe firmly that all over the world,
doing
this.
Yeah, I believe that too, Baba. I believe that there is a conscious awakening of us understanding how important it is for us to be sovereign. I think it has to be, Baba, because this insanity must stop. We got to step outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed us in. Step outside those boundaries and look at it for what it is. Understanding there is nothing that we can do to change who they are, because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. There is no discussion, no damn debate, nothing. Get outside and then move on our own. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. It's like the vice grip, analogy that I use. The European, the Caucasian has a vice grip on our minds. And if you know that too, you just cannot pull it apart. But there's a knob at the end of the handle where you can release that tension, and this symbolically meaning that you are acquiring knowledge of self. You're infusing yourself with who you are culturally, who you are historically, so you're able to turn that knob to release the tension. So finally you release the vice grip, and once again you see the cracker for who and what they are, and you don't move against them, you go inwardly. You purge yourself of the ignorance. You purge yourself of all the stupidity and so forth, and all the self-doubt and self-hate, to begin to love yourself. I fell in love with Africa. About 30-something years ago, I fell in love with Africa, and I fell in love with Africans, regardless, on the continent, throughout the diaspora. Everything that I have been doing for the last, I'd say, 30-some years has been trying to help us understand we are African people, and we must come together. The greatest threat to the European, to the Caucasian, is African unity. And that's why they do all that they can to constantly divide. We're going to take another call. 414-507. 414.
Hey, this is your Lizzie talking.
It's the Runed Black Law.
This is your Lizzie on the ground floor, working my way up from the bottom to the top.
I shit.
Anyway, man, this brother, Mr. Baruti. Oh my God, sir.
Yes.
When you're out here by yourself, it's like with the African consciousness, and you're surrounded by a whole bunch of people that don't give a rat's tail about Africanness. It's very difficult to keep a healthy mind. And so this show right now has really done a whole lot for me to help me restore my healthy mind, especially listening to you. because you saying, man, the thing about it is now, how the thing that sustains our, I think the most direct thing would be for us to build institutions that are coming from an African perspective.
Agreed.
And since, and there are people out here that got money that can do that, but the, but the way that they got the money is by from the people that enslaved us, put us in slavery. So it's a very difficult fight. But what I want to say is that what I think that one of the most profound, the central thing is that we believe that we are the descendants of slaves. And as long as we believe that, we will act accordingly. That's a core belief. And so until we remove that core belief, we will not be able to think clearly. We will not be able to see who we are properly. So it's so important that we remove that thought process from our subconscious mind. We are not the descendants of slaves. But anyway.
Let me say this. That's the problem I have with the American descendants of slaves, the ADOs. I have a problem with that. The title in itself, let alone the divisiveness that is creating, and the idea that they should receive reparations alone outside of the other African people who have been affected in the Caribbean, on the continent, throughout the diaspora. So I have a serious problem with that. And of course, if you ever heard me do a libation, you know I always mention that we were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We've never submitted. We always resist it.
And then we're looking to them. We're looking to the ones that put us in slavery for reparations.
Yes. But like they're going to give it.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, there's nothing, and they have never given reparations without being forced or putting in a, put in a position where they would see a, saw a gain out of it.
In effect, it's impossible. It's impossible for them to give us reparations.
True. That's true. Period.
If there's going to be any, if there's going to be any repairing for the damage that was done to us under slavery, we're going to have to do it ourselves.
Agreed. Yeah. I want them to be forced to return things that are returned. In fact, I want them to, who is that? Clarence Mumford in a book called Race and Reparations. You know, they don't have enough, but I still want everything from them, but I don't want them to give it to me or our empowerment to be contingent upon them giving reparations. That's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, everything that we build, we have to build ourselves.
And under slavery, we lost our African mind. And we cannot expect Europeans or even Africans with a Europeans, a Eurocentric point of view to help us heal.
Nope.
It cannot be done. It cannot be done.
Baba Baruti, we know we're coming up on that time. Do you have a little bit more time to give us? I know that your time is precious. I'm sincere about that. I know.
Well, let me say this.
Hold on. Go ahead, Baba.
And I appreciate that, but I do have to get back in there today. You know, we're preparing for this event.
Okay.
So I've already stolen some of EDI's time.
when I see her, I'll give her some looks. I appreciate this.
What I will say, Baba, and you know how I feel about you. As soon as this event is over.
Okay.
As soon as this, and in fact, as soon as the book comes out,
yes,
I'll be back.
Good.
But we can make this somewhat more regularly, maybe quarterly.
Well, let's do it. Let's
do
it.
You know, we can do that. That's it's never been a problem. You've never been a problem for me relative to wanting to be in your space.
No, not at all. And because I'm very respectful of you and what you're doing. Because I'm, you know, that's why I hadn't bothered you. You know, I've seen you a few times. You know,
I remember Milwaukee.
That's right. Well, you know this. Well, you know, Wednesday was a Queenie Fama the day that she passed, and we're having a tribute to Queenie Fama because that's how I met you, through Queenie Fama and her passing.
She was such a beautiful spirit.
Yes.
She was such a beautiful spirit.
So
I still don't believe it.
I know. You know. It was tough. Believe me.
Hey, she still talks to me to this very day.
Right on, LaRue. Well, we have another. Let's take this last call. 757-757.
Hey, greetings, Bob.
Greetings.
How are we doing? This is Brother Obasi.
Brother Obasi.
How you doing, Brother Obasi? How you doing? Excellent program on Saturday.
Nadase, Bob. I just want to give my respects. I'm not going to take up too much time. I've enjoyed the program. And what I do have to say is more programs like this are needed for the aspiring disciples like my age. Because what we are dealing with a lot of these Google babies is...
the Google babies.
It's like I can refer back to you, Bob, for when I say, like, who taught me? I can refer back to you. I can refer back to mama. I can refer back to a lot. And a lot of these people, we're not checking who taught these people. So it's like the children are running the school now. And that was the point in my presentation of we have to, like, put these babies to bed. And we have to really get back to hearing real scholars and not somebody that just read something on YouTube and it became a fact. But I support you, Baba Oshie, and I just appreciate everything that you have done to turn my mind to on the right path of what it's supposed to be.
Ashe.
And we appreciate you. And as I just said to Baba Oshie, we are going to be freeing up some time. And I can't, for those who write, they understand what it involves, just regular writing. This book finished out at about 940 pages, and I had to reduce it to about 720 in order for them to be able to print it. So that took an enormous amount of time and energy, but I need a break from that. Yeah. And I'm very sure that part of the break from the writing is going to come with engaging individuals on those programs, on those shows, that I appreciate, that I want to be around. And this is,
well, listen,
of course, a conversation that I want to have.
You have been instrumental from the moment that I had an opportunity to meet you. I bought your books then so many years ago when you were in Milwaukee, maintained that contact. How many books have you written?
This education makes 24.
Wow. I have the Enye Sesim here that I do every morning. In fact, what I do is I read the ones for that day. Like today is the 25th, but because of there's a weekend, and also too, if I see somebody, I want to make sure that I present to the people, you know, like a Dr. Yes. John Henry Clark, or in fact, Amos Wilson was the 23rd. And you've been doing, if people follow you on Facebook, you've been doing some beautiful pieces on Amos Wilson these last, what, 3 or 4 days. And one thing, let me say this, Bob, I know our time is running out, but one thing Amos Wilson said, nobody who is leading African people, if you're leading African people, you must go through an African-centered or a African consciousness course. You can't be just somebody who went to a Harvard, Yale, or Duke, and now you're talking about you leading African people. You need somebody who has been trained by African people, who have been instilled in the mindset of independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. These are the leaders that we need. These are the people who have been instructed in that way, not somebody who went to Howard, just because you went to Howard or some other HCBU. You see,
doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean a thing.
You know, and we, Enie and I, both taught at HBCU, two different HBCUs, and going there is no guarantee, none whatsoever. And in fact, some people become African-centered at these institutions despite the institutions, not because of them.
Right. in spite of them, and not because, exactly, because a lot of them were afraid to even say that they were African-centered because of losing accreditation or losing, more importantly, the funding from Europeans.
Absolutely.
You know, that funding. Absolutely. So we're at the close, Baba, so give us just a brief closing remarks so our brothers and sisters who have been calling from all across the country and listening across, even across the pond.
Well, I'm going to say to folks, because this is a short time, and I am going to be back, but read what I've written. I'm not the all-in-all authority, but if you really want to understand the African-centered perspective in terms of empowering African people, in terms of moving towards sovereignty, in terms of our education, in terms of what we need to build, because if we're not building, we're not doing, then take the time to read what I've written. I've written it just like the rest of our scholars. I've wrote it for us. And the thing that people cannot call me is compromise. I think out of the minds of our ancestors.
That's right, I say.
Okay. So, Madasi Baba, for having me on.
All right.
And we will talk to you and the family soon.
I say. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, we thank you for listening. Please join us on Wednesday. We have a tribute to Sister Queen Ifama, and, also, too, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodia. Abibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodia, family. Peace.